to Big Nerdy Questions, BNQ. Welcome to the very last episode of 2016, the year that was. And when I was considering this hole of a year, I thought to myself that it would be nice if society could just do over and respawn. Which is why I decided to have this topic be our last topic of the year. What if video game rules applied to real life? There is no boundaries on this one. We're not talking about specific games. Just concepts in video games across genres that we think would be entertaining, interesting, or frustrating if they occurred in the real world. And joining me on this foray tonight, we have Josh P.
Hey.
And we have Matt.
Yeah, 2016 can die in a fire.
Yeah, like many of our favorite protagonists in a game who have died in a fire over and over again.
My Nova King's died in so many fires.
The last time the three of us were together, we talked about who could lift Thor's hammer, which was going down as one of our new classics, I think. People are loving that episode. And in fact, I'm getting a lot of feedback on Josh. The fact that you're even back on this show after you so bravely gave the power of Mjolnir to SpongeBob SquarePants, but not to Bruce Wayne, that your bravery will live on in the annals of B&Q forever, sir. The bravest moment of 2016, at least on the internet. Well done.
On the internet? You mean nobody did anything bolder with Harambe?
Well, no. Putting something out for Harambe probably isn't so much brave as it is exhibitionist.
Okay.
So we hope that B&Q has given you a little bit of solace in this insane year, and we'll hope that 2017 will be better. But of course, we will press on for this very last year. And oh, by the way, happy holidays to you and yours on this last episode. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, and happy New Year, and happy every other holiday, happy Festivus. So thank you so much to everyone. Happy Wiki Life Day.
Right.
Happy Joy.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Christmas Hanukkah. And if you're listening to us on your brand new smartphone or MP3 player or whatever you just got for Christmas, thank you for making us a part of your new device. The virus that's embedded in our audio code will not be that harmful. We assure you.
It will, however, prevent your Galaxy Note 7 from bursting into flames.
Yes.
Wait, or is that cause it to?
Of course, instead of bursting into flames, your Galaxy Note 7 will, every 30 seconds, start speaking like a Gungan. You've been warned.
That would be the
Misa
worst virus ever.
Misa navigate you to somewhere. Misa order footlong. Misa like footlong.
Wow, that's really creepy. Okay.
Boy, I give you full credit on that one, Josh. You started that and you ended it.
I did. That's
in the same sentence.
Yeah, Jar Jar is rather toasty.
I'll take genres of pornography that should not exist for 1,000, Alex.
Subway Star Wars porn for the win.
Specifically starring Gungans. Things that should not exist.
Well, I just want to say for the listeners out there, if this little segment that we just did actually makes it to the final edit, I just want you to know that that officially means we have no blooper reel.
Good point.
Yeah, it does.
Matt, who's our sponsor tonight?
Well, Josh, tonight's episode is brought to us by Pepe's Barrel Rolls. Pepe Barrel Rolls. They look cool while deflecting lasers.
Is anybody else going to say it?
Barrel.
I thought the slogan was going to be Pepe's Barrel Rolls. Do one.
I almost went there, but I felt like it was too obvious. It just it felt too obvious.
So I have the Big Nerdy recommendation tonight, and since it's a gaming episode, I'm going to recommend a game. And my Nerdy recommendation tonight is called Dust, an Elysian Tale. It is a platformer game, a Metroidvania-style platforming game, available through Steam. It is this tale of a character named Dust, who has amnesia, as all protagonists seem to do these days. But the story unfolds that Dust comes across some fantastic beasts, and he knows where to find them. Hey-o. But it's... I don't want to give too much away about the story, because there are a lot of revelations that come every couple of levels that are really interesting. But the gameplay mechanics are what make this game stand out. It is very fluid. I think that's the best word for it. The fighting style is all about creating combos in the air against the creatures that you're fighting. You have a ranged attack with your companion. You can use the wind against your enemies. That's where the dust comes from, because you literally create dust that can attack your enemies. You also have a lot of sword play. But it is, even though it sounds like a fighting game and like a run and gun or old school Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles kind of in time kind of game, it's very much a platformer. You have to explore a lot to find collectibles, to find hidden areas. There's a lot of puzzles involved in trying to unlock new areas. There's crafting. There's a buying and selling system, much like Zelda. So if you want a story-rich... and by the way, the animation is very much influenced by Japanese animation. No particular anime, I would think, but very much influenced in that style. So if you want a story-rich platformer Metroidvania that has an interesting combat system, then I would recommend Dust and the Elysian Tale. That's E-L-Y-S-I-A-N, and it's revealed in the game what that means. You weren't supposed to know what that means before you play it. So I recommend that on Steam, and it does go on sale usually during the Steam sale in the summer and in the winter, and usually when it's on sale, it's less than $10. So I recommend highly picking up Dust. But that's our big nerdy recommendation. But we're now going to get into one of those what-ifs questions. We love what-if questions here. A few months ago, we had Colleen and Ed talk about what if Anakin doesn't go dark? What if Obi-Wan does? We had a lot of good feedback on that episode. But on this episode, we're talking about what if video game rules applied to real life. So each of us in turn are going to introduce a concept from video gaming and talk about its effects on life. Would it help things? Would it hurt things? Would it just generally cause chaos and confusion, much like Deadpool? We will see. And I'll start things off this week with the first concept I want to introduce, and it's the one I introduced in the introduction, actually, of this show, respawning. The idea in video games, and I do want to briefly define the concept. If you're not a gamer and you're listening to this episode, thank you for trying it out, and I'll keep you an open mind. Respawning is the term that's used when, in any video game, if your character dies, you can suddenly reappear and you have another life. In games like in first-person shooters like Call of Duty or Halo, respawning means your character shows up somewhere else on the map. In a platforming game, you probably restart from the beginning of the level or a checkpoint. And platforming games are like Mario, Donkey Kong, things like that. Donkey Kong Country, I should say. But respawning is the idea that you have another life, that death in a video game isn't permanent. And of course, there are exceptions. There is what's called permadeath in games. But we're going to be talking about respawning here. So, in my mind, if respawning actually applied to real life, let's just say the life insurance industry would be out of business. And a lot of other industries would be out of business as well, like the Undertaker industry, not the wrestler, the actual. I think people would act much more recklessly because there's no major consequence. And say, for example, someone was really curious what it feels like to skydive without a parachute. Not suicidal, but just want to feel free fall the whole way down. It's a bad... Why would you want to do that? But some crazy person might want to. But if you can respawn, they're not out of the gene pool. They don't win a Darwin Award. They're back in the gene pool, back on the ground, having now knowing what you could do. Of course, on the flip side, besides recklessness, it may actually lead to more creative problem solving. Do you need to know if a medicine is going to cure cancer or not? Test it on yourself. Worst case scenario, when you die, you just come back to life, you scrap the drug and restart. So it does open up a new world of problem solving, but in a very reckless manner. And of course, are there limits on the respawns? Is it more like a platformer where you have five lives and you're done? Or is it more like a Call of Duty where you just keep respawning until you beat the level? I don't know, but I gotta figure that respawning would completely change how humanity existed, because we so much define our human existence by the fact that we will all eventually croak. And respawning takes that off the board completely. Josh, I'd like to get your take on this. What do you think respawning would do to life?
Oh, man. Say you take a classic cop and bank robber shootout in downtown, all right? And they get back to the precinct after this firefight is over, and they start talking about kill-to-death ratio and personal statistics. It's like, man, I had a pretty good shootout out there, man. That was like 13 kills and only 2 deaths. I'm doing all right. Yeah, but it was kind of rude of that one bank robber to keep camping our spawn behind the police car, man. It was rough.
Don't get me started on the teabag.
Also, if you're take like the roads, all right? The road system would instantly become Sega Outrun from the late 80s, early 90s, where you do that one wreck and the car flips over and the man and girl that are in the car are like sitting on their butts very confused, and then all of a sudden the camera moves back over and the car reappears and you just keep going again.
But would the wreckage still be there from the first car?
Of course. Here's the thing. When you respawning means you come back into the world the way it is. The only way the wreck would go away is if you were loading a save game.
That's true.
Well, the dead bodies disappear in first-person shooters.
But everything else that you did stays there. Like, if you destroyed a building, that building's still gone.
That is true.
So that would be kind of crappy.
Yeah. But the car is part of your character in Sega Outrun, so
yeah.
I think the car would the wrecked car would disappear. Also, another game known for vehicle respawning is San Francisco Rush.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. God, I haven't heard that name in forever.
Oh, wow. Man. Who didn't do literally every stage on San Francisco Rush just crashing into a building rather than figuring out how to do handbrake turns?
Yeah, that was me on a Crazy Taxi. I would pick up a fare and just start wrecking it everywhere.
That was me on the interstate this morning.
So, Matt, I wanted to ask you, you are a historian of the military.
Yes.
Do you think respawning would change warfare to the point where it's no longer the ultimate way or the ultimate problem solver in a way? I'm not condoning war by any means, but
World
we have
war
seen
one would still be going on.
Exactly. We see through human history the only way that wars ever end is because one side can no longer fight it. How does respawning change the way that countries end disputes?
Well, the thing is, and this may sound absolutely horrible, but as a military historian who has studied this extensively and has actually participated in warfare, it's not the number of people who get killed that determines whether or not a side wins a war. It's entirely logistical. It's supply line. It's access to ammunition and food and all the things that are needed to wage the war. That's why during the American Civil War, one of the priorities of the Union Army was to destroy Southern railroads and to set up the blockade of the Atlantic coast and the Gulf of Mexico, because they were choking off the Confederate supply lines. And that was a huge part of why the Union won. Was they were able to just shut down the Confederacy's access to the supplies they needed to wage the war. So honestly, I really don't see, from a historical perspective or from a military perspective, any genuine impact on warfare from respawning.
So you don't think that wars would last any longer?
Any longer or any shorter, no. I don't think there would be any net impact.
Fascinating. Let's see, the impact that I might consider, and just get into culture a little bit, you know, one of the biggest things that cultures derive from war is remembering the fallen in a war. You know, we have Veterans Day, Memorial Day, that's the proper one.
Mm-hmm.
Remembrance Day, you know, we have in Canada right now through all of November, everyone wears poppies, and the same with the UK, on their lapel for remembrance of the fallen, particularly in that case World War I, but more generally veterans of wars. It's a major part of our culture to honor those who fell in defending the country. All of a sudden, that part of the culture goes away because no one has fallen. They may have, like you said, Josh, they fell 50 times while they were overseas, but they're still going to come home.
They just jacked up the KD ratio, and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a big change in how things are interpreted. You know,
it would remove the darkness from death.
Yeah.
What you just said, you know, that they talk about dying 50 times while they're overseas, you know, and then they will go and laugh about that in the locker room afterwards.
They'll be mocked because they died so many times.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I feel like it will cause those people who are depraved to find ways to keep people alive barely, because murder also goes away. So instead of murder, you would have people like imprisoning people and starving them, but not starving them completely in horrendous scenarios where that's the only way they do these things. And it's just horrible to think about. But I do think that the fundamental human condition is going to change. And I will point on this to you. I've actually listened to a few lectures from some futurists like Kurzweil and Aubrey de Grey, who are analysts on aging. And they actually, disagree on the dates. But a lot of the futurists think that by the year 2027, 2030, perhaps 2050, humanity is actually going to get to a point where the combination of improvement in healthcare, improvement in robotics, improvement in cyber tech is essentially going to let humans who can't afford it have essentially the same thing as respawning in an unending life, because they're now to the point where they have pinpointed the genes that cause aging, and they're working on trials to turn them off. And it's actually worked in some mice species where they were able to extend the lifespan, I believe, 350%, if I'm not mistaken. So you're talking about in the next 50 years, you could have people born that are going to live 300 years, if that possibly. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's possible. And also where if something catastrophic happens in the body, you could potentially transfer your consciousness to a computer and live in a weird way, in an electronic body. So I say this because I'm not saying I'm for it or against it or anything like that, just that this may be one of those scenarios that we would never have thought respawning would be a possible thing. But science is saying, yeah, by 2100, humanity may very well be to the point where it's a real thing. And that is, I don't know if the word is scary, strange, exhilarating, or some combination of the three, but it's certainly worth noting. On that interesting note.
That was good. I got nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we push that any farther, it's going to get its own episode. So.
Yeah. So let's go to the next one. Matt, you said you were going to introduce a concept that somehow made gaming easier but might make life more interesting. What was that?
Well, I actually have two different ones. So I'm going to start with one, and then I'll do the other one in the next time around.
Okay.
But the one I'd like to start with is actually one of our occasional panelists, Rachel, brought to my attention. And she unfortunately wasn't able to be on tonight. But she suggested that we mention mods.
Ah-ha-ha.
Because, you know, she and I are both grew up as console gamers and eventually became primarily PC gamers. And PC gamers are a big, big portion of the gaming audience, as it were, today. And quite a few of them are modders. And with games like Skyrim, you have all kinds of mods. So the question is, what kind of mods would you add to your life? There's so many ways you could go with it. Like, you could install a mod on your life that lets you change your appearance or makes it easier for you to get money or adds dragons.
Yeah.
Well, it lets you duplicate things.
I think that having mods in life would be entertaining, but of course the problem with mods is a lot of the most successful mods only work in a single-player context. It can be extremely jarring when you're playing a multiplayer game expecting one set of rules, and because somebody has modded it, you all of a sudden are playing by another set of rules that you never expected. So in a society where the social contract is in play, oh, Rousseau for the win, how does modding work? I mean, does your mod, if you mod your life and you say that, yes, in my life now, all the times that I see a bee or a spider, I'm going to be seeing Jigglypuff. Does that mean that your neighbor, who is deathly allergic to bees and spider bites, will suddenly be seeing Jigglypuff, not knowing what it is, get stung, and dies and then respawns, because we already talked about that. But you see where I'm going.
Right.
What do you say, Matt? How does that work? Does your modding stop at your personal bubble?
Well, the thing is, with the way mods would have to work around the concept of reality is on the idea that each person is a player character, mm-hmm. essentially. So you could basically only modify things that directly affect you. So you won't be able to do, like, change things in the environment. But you could do things like, oh, now you get, you know, you make money at an extra 50% rate at everything. You sell something for a price and you get home and there's an extra 50% that's just somehow there. That kind of deal.
So you could essentially break capitalism.
Yes.
So that's the Karl Marx mod, right? Yeah, I mean, okay, I have one other question with modding. Do you have the ability to mod your own life, or do you only have to download mods that are designed by others?
Well, I would imagine you'd have to be able to do your own mods. You'd have to come up with your own mods. Because if everybody's a player character and have to download their mods from someone else, then who's making the mods?
Ooh.
Bum, bum, bum!
Oh, holy That's... programmer.
Or, oh, holy Gary. if you prefer to use Gary's mod, you know. That is what modding will do to religions.
Yeah, respawning would screw up religion too, but modding would definitely screw it up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Between respawning and modding, I think we've already destroyed humanity's, basis of existence.
Everything? Look, breaking stuff is what I do, okay?
So, Josh, do you want to break society with your first concept?
Yes, and I am going after those crooks at the top of the medical industry.
Ah!
I am going to talk about eating and drinking, you know, food, water, potions, alcohol, to gain health.
Oh, what like if, in every game ever.
What if we had hit points and had to and had to make sure that our hit points stayed up? So there are a lot of things that would happen. First off, if that is our sole measure of how healthy we are, and all we had to do was eat a turkey leg to get back up into tip-top shape. Number one, doctors won't make nearly what they make.
See, I love that idea, especially considering, I'm not joking, earlier today I bought a 20-pound turkey.
Oh.
You didn't buy a 20-pound turkey, you bought 2,000 hit points.
Yes. Man, my max HP is only 100. This thing's going to last me forever.
There you go.
Where's the boss? I'm coming for him.
Unfortunately, it disappears from your inventory after the first use, because that's just how consumables work.
Ah! So,
yeah, it's just like you kill the one 500-pound buffalo in Oregon Trail, and you can only bring back 100 pounds of it. But you just keep shooting the buffalo anyway, because it's fun. But anyway, So yeah, there would be doctors would not be the revered medical experts that they are in our current society if all we had to do to recover our health was eat food or drink a water or potion. The pharmaceutical industry would not be what it is today. I think there'd still be one. Like the pharmaceutical industry would focus on making potions that restore HP, or if we are a magic using culture, you know, restore mana. You still have your classic, you know, antidotes and you know, paralyze, heal, you know, all those other potions that you need in order to revive yourself of status ailments. So there would be some form of pharmaceutical industry, but even though you still would need to diagnose status ailments, they're all very obvious. If you're suddenly losing hit points at an alarming rate, you're probably poisoned. Well, I mean, you're definitely poisoned. If you suddenly can't move, that sounds like paralysis to me. Let's get the old stun heal out of the bag. could you be a deer and pour that in my mouth for me? Oh, that's great. Thanks. And if all you had to do was eat food to gain health, where in the world does aging fit into that, and what does that do?
That's a great question. I was just thinking that when you were talking myself, like when we were talking, how are there characters in games where you eat for health and it's just based on HP? How are there characters that age? And if you age, does that mean you eventually will die of old age, or you just age infinitely until you look like Gollum as long as you maintain your HP?
That's a good question. I think of games that have possibly captured the concept of aging, and the only one that comes to mind to me is the Gauntlet series of games, because in most of the Gauntlet games, your HP constantly ticks down 1 point per second. You can eat food to gain back more HP, but generally speaking, every enemy that comes into contact with you reduces that timer at a set amount each time you take a hit. But you can't just stand still because, you know, get busy working or get busy dying.
Blue Wizard needs food badly.
In fairness, The Sims had an interesting way to tackle this. And I'm not a Sims player, but Aaron is. And I know that the way it works is every character has a set lifespan as far as age. There is a way to extend it by getting a Fountain of Youth, buying it, and that's another part of it. But essentially, you have a set time span with age, but you also have health. And if you don't eat right, if you don't go to the bathroom, if you don't have hygiene, then your health bars will go down, which are the equivalent of HP. So your character can die in peak age, or even as a child, if they don't have right health bars. But if you do everything right, the character will naturally die after a certain amount of in-game time. So there's a distinction there. But in other franchises like Elder Scrolls, it seems like it's just purely based on keeping up your HP.
True.
And that seems like a... I know from my point of view, if health was based only on eating, I'd be the healthiest person in the United States. So that would be fine with me, especially if it involved having turkey legs. Which I think a lot of us have right now in this time of year. Matt, what do you think about eating for health?
Well, I think it's delicious. And as far as the issue of how it would impact aging, because it does create the requirement of an HP pool, I think the way aging would work is after a certain point, you have to do certain things to keep your HP pool at full size. And over time, your max HP will reduce until it eventually your maximum hits zero. Well, your max will hit one. You'll lose one hit point and you're dead.
So more than likely, what it would be is if it's in a society, like if you're with an older person and they get down to one HP, you would just have the family gathered around and wait for them to get a cold or something, or just stub their toe.
Just go long enough without eating.
Yeah. And that way the family can be around them at the point of death.
Right.
Rather macabre.
It,
It would make end of life care a lot more predictable. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
It certainly would. Yeah. I mean, assisted suicide would just be getting a cut on your toe. Take that, Kevorkian.
So I think what would more accurately what would happen is it's not that the max would ever go down to zero and that's how you die of old age. I think
your max would get so low that the littlest thing would be enough to do it.
And that's essentially, and if we're talking about it, I mean, that kind of feels like that's what
how it really is now.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, honestly, we just described HIV.
That too.
I mean,
I didn't even think of that.
I mean, that's what we just described is the way that HIV works. And for those of you who don't know the science, HIV/AIDS doesn't kill you. It just destroys your immune system so that the simplest minor affliction becomes life-threatening. That's essentially what we just described, and I don't think anybody wants to impose that on anybody else. But there are pros to this system, clearly. I mean, if you have food or water or Nuka-Cola available,
quantum,
you can restore your health. So there's clearly pros to it. And you mentioned the pharmaceutical industry. I'd argue the pharmaceutical industry and the fast food industry merge. Because
a fair point.
You know, all of a sudden you have Coca-Cola and KFC in charge of the most important thing for your health. It's an odd thing to think of, but I mean, think about KFC could be like, you've been prescribed a bucket of popcorn chicken and call me in the morning.
Somebody say make health points?
And you raise your cap in games by leveling up. So let's talk about leveling
up. Nice segue.
Let's talk about leveling up. And in gaming, for those of you who don't know, leveling up, you earn a certain amount of experience points depending on the game. It's called different things. And after a certain level, you reach a new barrier. Some music plays, some sparkles go off, and there's great rejoicing. And your character suddenly has a higher maximum health, can potentially gain a new ability, can suddenly gain access to new things, or gets to go have a boss fight, so that, it could be a scary thing. But leveling up is how your character progresses. In a Metroidvania game like Dust, our recommendation, typically it means that all of a sudden you have a new ability. Like in Metroid, when you level up, you may get the ability to set off bombs when you're in the ball mode, for example. And you have the wonderful sound play, do 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 do, and that means that you have acquired something of value. If we had leveling up in the real world, that would totally change milestones and holidays. We would no longer be celebrating birthdays. We'd be celebrating leveling ups. As like, oh man, next time I get this report to my boss, I am going to get 20 XP. I'm going to level up to level 45. And I'm going to suddenly get access to the hottest club downtown.
People would be so much more productive.
It would increase productivity. I mean, and there's actually, strangely you mentioned that, some of the most successful apps are ones that gamify non-game activities. There are apps that do this with dieting. There are apps that do this with dating, learning a language like Duolingo. There are apps that create XP for non-gaming activities. And psychology studies have shown that you were right, Matt. It increases the motivation to get it done. Even if it's something as mundane as, I will reward myself 15 XP when I fold the laundry and put it away, it will increase your odds of doing it. And maybe, just maybe, it would motivate people who are otherwise apathetic or lackadaisical. And as an aside, I certainly wish we would give XP for voting, because Lord knows it would increase the turnout. but good grief. So what do you guys think would happen if we had leveling up? Josh, what do you think would happen?
One thing that I thought of was job searches. You're looking for the right guy for your company. And living in a world with the XP and leveling system, and I assume that with this, there's also skill levels on top of that.
Skill trees, Yes.
It gives you a pure and uncorruptible way to choose who you want to work for your company and for you to know if you are qualified for a job and for you to not be able to complain if you are not chosen for the job. There are so many, you know, to kind of touch a sensitive subject here, that there are a lot of times a company will turn down someone and they'll say, oh, well, this person didn't like me because of my ethnicity or because I'm a woman or something like that. If we had a skill tree in place like that, there'd be no way that anyone could have an excuse for being turned down for a job.
And it's a pure meritocracy.
Yes. That was the word I was looking for. I had forgotten.
It's pure Confucianism if we actually put it in place. There's one thing I'm afraid of that, though. You know, as we all know, if you're stuck in an area of a game where you can't beat a boss, you go kill the little sheep creatures outside for a couple of hours and just, you know, farm for XP. So what's to make someone not just, you know, I'm going to go spend the next 2 weeks doing random small XP things like ironing a shirt or, you know, buying a cup of coffee for somebody, and they're going to falsely raise their XP, much like someone would falsely claim something on their resume, and then you hire somebody who all their XP has been farmed that way instead of actually getting it in the field that they need it for the job.
Well, that's where the skill tree comes in, though. Because the skill trees, it is going to be siloed into that. So, you know, if I'm an HR manager looking for someone for a public relations position or a marketing position or something like that, and I've got a candidate who comes in, you know, I've got a whole bunch of candidates who are level 40, and I'm interviewing somebody, and it's, well, you know, I see you've only got, you know, 6 levels of speechcraft, but you have 85 levels of lockpicking and a 68 in sneak. So I think you might not be the best fit for this position.
Yeah. Yeah, you can definitely see that. Because now maybe that would open up more jobs too. Because if you're looking at charisma, you know, in our current culture, you know, if someone specializes in, say, information science, which I actually coincidentally have a master's in, I can get a job in information science, but I typically can't get a job as easily in information technology, even though it's a similar field because the degree is so – everything is so specialized. Similarly, a degree in economics and a degree in business are not considered the same thing, even though they're so closely related. But in a skill tree, your skill set would be in speechcraft or in computing or in economics, something in general like that. And in the principles of a thing.
Construction magic.
Exactly. Archery, so your abilities suddenly will match up better with all the jobs that match your skill set as opposed to the one particular job title that your degree is tailored for. So maybe in addition to a meritocracy, it opens up the playing field for job seekers as well.
Yeah.
At least one has to hope.
It would make interviews so much more interesting.
Oh yeah, would there be interviews? I mean, I guess you still have to figure out if they have.
It would be like quest lines. That's what it would be. It would be quest lines. When you do things like in Elder Scrolls, where you're joining a guild or an organization, like the Companions or the Thieves Guild or the Dark Brotherhood, you know, you do a quest first before they actually let you join. So basically, they're gonna send you to do a quest to prove your worth before they're going to hire you to do other quests for them.
Okay, I see.
And maybe there will be 2 or 3 rounds of quests.
You have to go pitch this project to the architectural firm. If they select our business as their one to build the building, then you may come back and retrieve your reward, a desk on the second floor.
There may be some gold in it.
And you can start putting your crap in that desk because you need to store all the stuff you can't carry with you.
Finally, somewhere to put my dragon bones.
and your apples.
Dragon Bones and Apples. I love that band. No,
now playing Psy Stage at Lollapalooza.
Well, Matt, I actually think you mentioned to me before the show that you want to talk about something that I think ties in perfectly with all of this, with questing and things like that, something that may help you on your quest.
Well, especially with leveling up, actually, because something that ties directly into leveling up is raising your skills and learning abilities. And what better and cheaper way to do that than skill books and spell tomes in the real world?
Nice!
And the thing is, you don't even have to read the whole thing. You ever notice that? You only have to just, you open it.
You open
it. Look at the title page and you're good.
They would charge you admission to the library.
The public library would start looking a lot more like the Mage's Guild towers in video games. Defended by extremely powerful mages. Literacy! You're going to have to prove to me that you can cast Firebolt first.
That's fantastic.
It's a good, I mean, yeah, it would definitely change your life, because all of a sudden you can go read a book and gain a skill immediately.
Reading Rainbow would take on a whole new meaning.
It would.
True that.
Take a look. It's in a book. LeVar Burton is your new god.
Now, would that, though, unintentionally take away the value of a person who has this particular set of skills? Because, for example, right now in our society, being a neurosurgeon is considered, you know, a worthy thing because it takes so much training and specific skills. But if you can learn how to do neurosurgery by reading one book, all of a sudden, why would you pay a neurosurgeon when you can have your best bud learn it and take care of it in a day?
Well, the thing is, with skill books, I mean, not so much with spell books, but with skill books, it only raises your skill by 1 point. So even if, say, you use the skill neurosurgery, and I'm sure there would be some type of, like, stamina bar or something that would have to have a massive expert-level pool in order for you to actually be able to use it. Like, oh, neurosurgery costs, you know, 75 stamina a minute. So you better have a crazy stamina pool to do it. You're not doing it at level 5.
But the scary thing I just thought of, if every book were a skill tome, what does that mean when you read the Kardashian autobiography?
I'm pretty sure you lose points for that one.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Like, that would just be a horrific thing.
You actually lose 10 XP by opening it.
You know, that actually is a game mechanic I haven't seen before. They should take away points for if you read a bad book.
I don't think that's how it works, though.
Reading Twilight would actually cost you like 15 points worth of knowledge in every category. Like knowledge folklore, knowledge history, knowledge local, all of it, minus 15 points.
Okay.
Of course, you could argue that reading other things, you can be stronger and you don't have to necessarily believe it because you have strength of skill, but we're taking a lighthearted look at it here. So, skill books, spell tomes, leveling up, and retrieving HP through eating. All of those kind of go together and they would completely change how we live as humans. But I want to segue here. Josh, you actually said before the show, you told me you wanted to talk about if life were a platforming game. What did you mean by that?
There's a lot to unpack in this concept. But most platformers, whether they're two-dimensional or three-dimensional, they have one major concept, and that's the one-touch death. If somebody who plays for the bad guys comes into physical contact with you, it kills you. This is completely unlike all of the other. This does not go with all the other things we discussed tonight, but that's okay. I want to talk about what the world would be like if, just as an example, because a lot of what they did, as you know, the king of platforming adventures, applies to most other platformers out there. What would happen if the rules of the Super Mario universe applied to real life? And I know that you guys touched on this very lightly in the pilot episode about which fictional universe you want to live in.
Yes.
But I think we can take this a little bit further now. What would the society be like? Well, let's look at what you have, okay? Your entire goal in life is to not get killed by coming into physical contact with a Goomba unless you step on it, okay? You know, Goombas are about the same height that you are, unless you eat a mushroom, and then you become twice as big instantly. and you can take one hit before you die.
All I know is that given the things we've done so far in this episode, if this were all to come to pass, mushrooms would be the single most sought-after food item on Earth.
Exactly, okay? And I actually, here's where I'm going with this, okay? Elysium.
Whoa.
The society would be split between an upper class of tall, gorgeous people who can take one hit before they die, and the lesser, regular-sized people who are constantly walking around in fear of death all the time. The taller, more athletic, greater physical ability people will eventually be the ones that take power, whatever government it is, whether it's, you know, a bloody coup, a democracy, whatever. The resources would go to them. They would have the mushrooms. They would instantly regrow if they die. You can also just eat a mushroom when you're big size already and you just get 1,000 points for free, if you know that means anything. Points never mean anything in video games, though. if we're being honest about it.
Just like Whose Line.
Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, the society would have the richer people who have all the resources and can live forever because they'll also never come into contact with enemies. And then you'll have the lesser people living below that have to run away from turtles that are about as big as they are, because if the turtle touches them, they die. That is the kind of society that I think would be created if platformer rules existed in real life. You guys are free to expand.
That got really dark really quick.
Yeah.
I agree. When I think of One Touch Death, I actually picture the John Travolta classic, The Boy in the Bubble.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the regular people who don't have the one hit would find a way to encase themselves much like an egg in a high school egg drop. Because you are afraid of anything. One hit and you're dead? Like, you can't stub a toe. You can't get bit by a mosquito. You can't fall. You can't eat a dodgy Indian food meal. You can't do any of it. You have to be perfect. Humans cannot, by definition, be perfect. So you're gonna... Can you even have an existence? It's the opposite of the respawning problem. Because all of a sudden, it's like, what do you do?
Well, okay. I mean, let's assume that you do have a finite number of lives.
So you have, like, 5 lives. So at some point, you're like, okay, I'm gonna go out today, and I'm going to obtain some food. But I know this, going out today, I'm probably going to give up one of my lives to get my food.
Well, if you don't get the food, you're going to give up one of your lives anyway.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a really... I feel like this is an interesting premise for a novel. If somebody took this premise and ran with it, that someone has 5 lives, but every life can be ended by a minuscule thing, that would completely change human psychology.
And let's not forget, resources exist that grant extra lives, which would, of course, again, be hoarded by the taller, more powerful people who already are set for life.
Yeah, hashtag Occupy Mushroom Kingdom.
There we go. I was thinking hashtag South African Mario Brothers.
Oh, that's...
Mushroom apartheid.
Oh.
Oh, God.
I'm choosing not to participate in this because I don't want to go to hell.
I divest my funds from Mario.
Well, I mean, let's think about it. Isn't that essentially what every Blomkamp film is? Is a commentary on the situations in South Africa?
Yes. Yeah. So District 9 is where the aliens live. District 10 is where Yoshis live.
Yes. Dinosaur Island, baby.
Which, hey, if we're going in Mario rules, we get dinosaurs back, and they're friendly. They're like our dogs.
Yeah.
That's nice.
They have a voracious appetite, though.
They can eat anything and poop it out still as a whole thing.
But inside an egg.
Yes.
Which is just weird, let's face it.
Which would be worse, living in a world where platforming rules applied or living in a world where RPG rules applied?
Platforming worse.
Yeah, it sounds like that would be pretty worse. You guys didn't do a good enough job making your ideas sound dark enough.
Yeah, I mean, there are some downfalls to them, but platforming is, that's a scary world. And what happens when the woman you're dating, and you're Mario, you can jump a little bit. What happens when she's the guy who wears the blue outfit and can go super fast just by going and spinning himself, and he hangs out with a guy that can fly with two tails? Your girlfriend's going to dump you faster than you can get a ring.
Oh.
Our last idea comes from Matt, and it is a meta idea. It's not so much about what's in the game, it's about how you play it, right?
It's in the game. No, EA this is Sports. Not EA. This is not an EA thing.
Yeah, because it's actually not broken.
Well, actually, depending on how you use it, you're going to break all the things. Because I am talking about the console command.
Nice.
That's right. Everybody's going to be walking around with a keyboard. You just tap the tilde key, type something in, and you've just changed the universe. You need money? Tilde. Time stops. Player. Add item. 7 zeros. F. Space. Amount of money. Enter. Tilde. Boom. Money added. I may play a little too much Elder Scrolls.
The Federal Reserve would like to have a word with you there, Matt.
I'm sure they would.
Can we see
what would that do to national debt?
It'd be gone.
Credit card companies would cease to exist. Once you've got your hands on a keyboard, you're set for life.
You become the Oprah Winfrey of life. You get money, you get money, and you get a car, and you get a bee, and you get everything.
Bees!
And you get gonorrhea. Oh, wait.
Oh.
Better eat some cherries fast. You see, cherries are the ones you eat to cure STDs because we're ironic.
Whereas, anyone else would expect it to be the thing that got you into the mess in the first place. Backwards here on B&Q.
Hold up. I just have to stop for a second and just point something out. That joke that Josh just cracked is the most cleverly crafted dirty joke I think I've ever heard in my life.
I think that may be the first joke he's ever made that actually wasn't a bad pun. Oh my god, Josh just made an actual joke. An proper non-pun joke.
So I just leveled up in speechcraft.
Yes, you got a level in speechcraft.
Yes.
Hashtag
to Gryffindor.
Hashtag Josh actually joshing.
Ah, nice.
Hashtag joshing with Josh.
I'll take rejected names for B&Q for 200, please. We might want a council command on this episode at this point.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you don't even need a keyboard. You could use your iPhone, your smartphone, to just bring up a notepad on an app on your phone and just be like, hey, Tilda, date Scarlett Johansson. Done.
True.
Move to dot player, Scarlett Johansson. She would be getting yanked all over the world so fast, so much.
Are you sure you want to use the word yanked in this context?
Yes, I am. I am dead certain that that is the term I am choosing. Because I am a horrible human being.
I feel like it's when you pick up a player and you have to drag them, like with their legs dragging, and like you pop them somewhere else in the gaming world. That'd be the celebrities being like, oh, you're going here, you're going here. Yeah. That would be horrible.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like somebody would have to make ground rules on what you can and cannot do with console commands, just in terms of legality.
Right. Maybe That some commandments, if you will.
The ten console commandments.
That's a hashtag. I don't want it to be, but it is.
Thou shalt not continue to pull Scarlett Johansson from place to place around the world. She has a life too, you douchebag.
Pretty much don't use your console commands to be a douche.
So it's Wheaton's Law with a keyboard? Not a dick.
All right, Matt, to quote Jerry Springer, our producers have decided that you'll lead us into the break.
Matthew.
Oh, man. I don't think anybody's on top of that.
No, I think that's time to wrap up this episode of what if video game rules applied to real life. And I know that you guys, your loyal listeners, have a lot of interesting thoughts on this one that we didn't get to, because I'm sure there's a lot more out there that we can parse through. But please let us know your thoughts and crazy scenarios. We'll read them on the air. Send them to us via email at bnqfeedback@gmail.com, or send us a tweet at bnqpodcast. We would love to hear from you on video game rules and how they'd apply to the real world. And with that, Josh P., thank you so much for being on the air tonight with me.
Oh, man, always a pleasure.
And Matt, before I thank you, you have some business to take care of, don't you?
Yes, I do, because this is Big Nerdy Questions, and Jar Jar only thought he might be getting away this time, but he was wrong. Because, you see, today, Josh, Jar Jar Binks was crushed when the Dovahkiin dropped 50,000 Idar cheese wheels on top of his head from the top of a cliff. I guess you could say he was lactose intolerant. But now that Jar Jar has died for the last time in 2016, we here at B&Q need to provide a special message to the year 2016.
And before you say it, Matt, I will preface this by saying you've only made me beep you once so far in the entire run of B&Q, but this is worthy. Make me use a long beep, sir.
Dear 2016, here at Big Nerdy Questions, you've put us through some... You killed a gorilla for some reason, and apparently people had a fit about it. And then you killed Prince, and other people who are actually important. People like Alan Rickman. You can f*** yourself for that one, 2016. Alan Rickman was a good guy. We liked him. And Prince was awesome. Seriously, what the f***?
And then you went and took Britain out of Europe.
That was f***ed up.
And then you went and took America into the Twilight Zone.
We elected a Balloompa as leader of the free world.
So 2016, you can go die in a dumpster fire. And I'm not going to let you level up. No soup for you, 2016. B&Q will go on in 2017, but you won't, you filthy little
So here's to the year 2117, at which point the world will have agreed that we will talk about 2015 and we will talk about 2017, but you don't talk about 2016.
Good riddance. For Matt, Josh P., this is Josh H., hoping that for all of us, for God's sake, let's make 2017 the year of the happy nerd. Good night, everybody.
And 2017, if you're even half as bad as 2016, I will f*** you harder than that director f***ed up Galactus by making him a cloud.
Good night, everybody.